from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 43, recorded Wednesday, November 29th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100. Online at codesmithtools.com. And by Slash N Software Red Carpet Subscriptions, the most comprehensive solution for adding connectivity to your .NET and ASP.NET applications, with components from every major internet protocol. Online at www.nsoftware.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss life hacks with author and developer Gina Trapani.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes at hanselminutes.com. And I'm here with Scott Hanselman and a very special guest. Hello, Scott.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Why don't you introduce our guest?
We don't do a lot of guests here on the show, of course, but we're very fortunate to have Gina Trapani from lifehacker.com.
Hi, Gina.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We really appreciate you taking the time. I actually wanted you to be on the show because we have some friends in the publishing industry, and I got a pre-release copy of your upcoming book called Life Hacker, 88 Tech Tricks to Turbocharge Your Day. Say that three times fast. and read it and just loved it. I think I explained it to my editor saying that you know a book is good when you read it and you're jealous that you didn't write it yourself.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, yeah, I was kind of bummed. You beat me to it. I was just, oh, this is a great book. I need to write that. It's just nice, short, but very productive life hacks to make everything better about your life. But, you know, we did a life hack show before, and I know that you listened to that show. But can you tell us a little about the origin of the term life hacks?
Actually, the term was coined by a gentleman named Danny O'Brien, who's a technology journalist, who did a presentation at the eTech, O'Reilly's eTech conference in 2004. And the name of his session was Life Hacks, the Secrets of Overprolific Alpha Geeks. And basically, he had polled, like, I don't know, a few dozen of his, like, geekiest friends and said, how do you guys get your stuff done every day? And what came out of the interviews is that, you know, as geeks, I mean, hey, especially programmers, right, because your whole job as a programmer is to automate something, you know, build software that's going to take the load off of a human being. But a lot of programmers build in these, like, kind of embarrassing little scripts or stupid systems or shortcuts in their kind of everyday workflow to speed things up. So his presentation, Danny's presentation, was done in 2004, and I just love the term. I just love the term life hack. I thought I had those little shortcuts and scripts and batch scripts and things kind of set up for myself, and I love to hear about what other people did and how they ran their lives, you know, their kind of like digital lives. So.
And this isn't just software we're talking about, Gina, right? These are any, I mean, like I saw bookends made out of CD cases on your blog, is it?
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, Danny's original intention, I mean, the original term sort of referred to mostly technical things like, you know, scripts to, you know, filter your email or run your, you know, to-do.txt file. But the term kind of has been broadened, and we've at lifehacker.com, we've kind of broadened it to include lots of different things like making, you know, bookends out of CD cases or, you know, how to, I don't know, fold your sheet.
Like, one of the life hacks that I've hacked my life with is this Pocket Mod.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just taking a piece of paper, building up pages and printing it out and making a tiny little book. I mean, I think I did that in seventh grade, but uh-huh. It seems so much cooler when it's a Flash applet, you know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. Oh, yeah, I mean, Merlin Mann, the Hipsterpedia, which you talked about in your last your life.
Right,
hack.
That's the one with the rubber bands, right?
Yeah, the index cards.
Yeah, I call it syncing to paper. I do it all the time.
Yeah,
when life
yeah,
gets
I've
too overwhelming,
my
when my gadgets aren't
time.
Working, when my Palm Pilot and my Pocket PC and my BlackBerry aren't talking to each other, I just say, get a bunch of 3x5 cards and sync to paper.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, the first chapter of your book is called Free Up Mental RAM. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you're a getting things done kind of convert as well.
Yes, I am.
So you're all about David Allen and his getting things done. I think we did a show on getting things done.
All hail, David.
Yeah. All hail. And I'm flipping through some of the ones that I liked right here. You have everything from how to set up an Apache web server and make your own wiki, local wiki, to how to take great notes. I mean, this all happens in one chapter. And that's going to kind of give you a taste of what the book is like. One of the things that I noticed that I actually asked Carl about before we started the show that he had was not familiar with, and I think not enough people are familiar with, is this notion of bookmarklets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never heard of those.
What is a bookmarklet and why do they rock?
A bookmarklet is just, it's basically a link that you bookmark, but the link isn't to a URL. It's a snippet of JavaScript, which, you know, does something on the page that you're looking at. So, for instance, if you use, are you familiar with, like, the Delicious bookmark, social bookmark system?
Sure. Totally. Yeah, I use the Firefox extension for Delicious before I use
the Firefox
bookmarklet.
Extension is great too. There's a Delicious bookmarklet that you can, you know, you just drag and drop to your toolbar, which, you know, if you're looking at a web page that you want to add to Delicious, you just hit the bookmarklet and it pops up a window which automatically lets you do that. So it's just like a regular bookmark, but it does JavaScripty things.
Now, is there something like that for Dig too? Because
yes,
I notice in Dig you have to, you know, most people put little icons embedded in their web pages in order for the viewers to be able to add them to Dig, but you can do that externally too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can use a Dig bookmarklet as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, it seems with bookmarklets you could, like, if I wanted to write a bookmarklet that would highlight the word Hanselman on any page.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that. It's basically you have full access to the DOM because the JavaScript's running locally. It's not a cross-site scripting attack, and you can just click and do whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
So it could be search and replace or extract. You could make a bookmarklet to make fonts bigger.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. I wrote a bookmarklet called the Lie Detector, L-Y. Since I do a lot of writing, one of the kind of rules in writing is that you're not supposed to use adverbs very often, which are words that end in L-Y. So I wrote a bookmarklet that actually will highlight any words that end in L-Y on a page, like in yellow, like as if it were a highlighter.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, so you know that a page isn't written very well, a post isn't written very well if it lights up like a Christmas tree when you hit the, you know, the Lie Detector bookmarklet. So you can do all kinds of neat things with bookmarklets.
Gina?
Yes?
Misbehaving.net. That's an awesome blog name.
Yes, it is.
I love that.
One of the other sites that I contribute to.
And I particularly like the quote, "Well-behaved women seldom make history." I've seen that on a few bumper stickers in my town.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a fun site that I work with, collaborate with a few other women in tech on.
Okay.
Now, speaking of women in tech, a lot of our listeners and a lot of techies, as you well know, are men. And sometimes people say, well, women kind of head towards in the designer perspective and men head towards the, you know, the C++ direction.
Mm-hmm.
As a woman in tech, do you see any kind of, and I presume you've been doing this for a while, you know, we've kind of all been doing this for, you know, 10 plus years, 15 years. Is there a change? Is that a fair separation?
You know, I haven't done any kind of official studies on this. So,
well, sure. I'm just thinking ballpark.
Totally
we're just chatting here.
Yeah, from my just kind of my opinion. I think that in general, women, or at least I'm really focused on how technology can be useful, like the place where technology intersects with your life. Whereas, and again, speaking in very general terms
yeah,
here.
Yeah, totally general.
I think men can get just sort of really wowed by technology just for the sake of technology, which kind of brings it to the, I mean, that's like slogan is, you know, don't live to geek to live. And that's kind of my focus with Lifehacker is like, we're not just going to talk about technology just because it can, you know, just because it's cool or like do things just because you can. You do things because like the whole purpose is that we're like humans and the machines are supposed to help us.
Our
not
technology
just kind of
keeps
us
warm and cozy.
I think Gina, though, you just nailed it, though, and that's
totally
actually good because I've got listed down here to talk about. You have a kind of an ongoing column within your site called Geek to Live, and I think you nailed it. I mean, to speak in general terms, men live to geek and women geek to live. If this isn't making my life better or the world better in some substantive way, then it's just being silly. It's just being men. It's a universal remote control I'm never going to use.
Gina, what's the invisibility cloak all about?
The invisibility cloak is a user script that I wrote for For Grease Monkey. So Grease Monkey is a Firefox extension, and which can run any JavaScript on any given web page, right? So you have Grease Monkey installed, and you say, I have this user script that I want to apply to the following website. So I wrote this user script, this Grease Monkey user script, called the Invisibility Cloak, which blanks out any websites that you don't want to keep yourself from looking at, right? So, like, I'm a Metafilter addict, right? I can spend hours, especially on Ask Metafilter, or say slash dot, or say dig, right? I mean, I can just, you know, I've got an article due tomorrow, and, like, I could spend 3 hours just clicking around those sites. And there are times when I just need to, you know, strap myself down to the chair and keep myself away from any of those, you know, really kind of time-sucking sites. So. So the Invisibility Cloak, you can apply it to the sites that really, you know, take up a lot of time, like Flickr or Metafilter. And when it's enabled, if you go to one of those sites when you're supposed to be doing some work, it blanks out the site and it pops up a little, you know, alert box that says, get back to work. So you're supposed to be working on something else.
So this is typical Carl here. Wouldn't it be easier just to get another computer that isn't connected to the net, that only has Word on it?
It would, but at least most of my work requires that I like look things up on the internet.
Ah.
So like I need to be on the internet. I just got to stay away from those sites
right.
that I know just will like, you know, take me away
yeah,
for hours.
Totally. I noticed that one of your hacks in here about life specific hacks is don't check your email in the morning.
Yes.
Get in and take that first hour when you sit down where you spend, you know, you sit down at 8 a.m, you start checking your email, next thing you know, it's 10:30.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rather
yep.
than having that 2.5 hours be disappear in a fugue just because you were checking your email, you
Man,
have that be a productive sprint.
That's a great
right.
tip.
It is. Now, there's a tool that you guys use on Lifehacker, and I understand that you have some other editors who work with you on the site. It's not just you, right?
Yes.
And this, I can't remember the name of the tool. It's like AutoIt or AutoHotkey. AutoHotkey. This is like a whole cult around AutoHotkey.
Yes. Yeah.
What's the scoop there?
AutoHotkey is an open source Windows scripting tool. So that lets you basically just automate Windows tasks. So you can program in mouse clicks, keyboard presses, you know, and put, you know, it's actually a pretty robust, you know, scripting language. You can put conditionals and while loops and all that stuff. So we've written a few articles. In fact, my co-editor Adam is a big AutoHotkey fan.
And
so one of the things I use AutoHotkey for is I embed snippets of HTML into each post on Lifehacker, like my byline, and that we have a specific markup for to include a link. So I have little AutoHotkey text snippets that, you know, that fill in automatically. Like I'll type BBY and it'll, you know, automatically fill in my, you know, the markup to show my byline on a post.
Hmm. I just downloaded his Adam Pash's Mouser. It's interesting. I had a problem with a mouse not working. I couldn't quite figure it out, so I downloaded Mouser, and it basically gives you a hotkey that lets you then plug the mouse into the keyboard. So basically the arrow keys or the certain keys on your keyboard will control the mouse.
Exactly.
And then from that, I found a mouse grid hack that one of your readers had done.
Mm-hmm.
A mouse grid, Carl, is where you say hotkey, and then the screen chops up into nine slots.
Nice.
And then you hit like 7, that would mean the upper left corner. And
yeah.
then that 7, what used to be 7, then chops up into 9.
Huh.
And then you hit 7 again, and then that one chops up into 9. So you basically, in 3 or 4 clicks, can select any point on the screen. So rather than moving the mouse,
right.
you're basically playing Battleship with your screen.
That's
and
pretty
it's
cool.
all enabled with this AutoHotkey. One of the other AutoHotkey things that just has completely changed my life is this Wikipedia autocorrect.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
Did
me too.
Did you do that?
Yep, I have it running all the time.
Did you write that?
I didn't actually. One of our readers did. I had written a post about how you, if there are certain words that you misspell all the time, like my name is Gina, it's G-I-N-A, I always type G-I-A-N when I type my name.
Dyslexic fingers. I have
yeah,
that
dyslexic
problem
fingers,
too.
Exactly. So I made an AutoHotkey script that said any time that I type G-I-A-N, you know, change it automatically to my name. So then one of our readers said, hey, there's this list of commonly, you know, misspelled words on Wikipedia, and they made, you know, the text replacement AutoHotkey script with that.
This is a fantastic tool, Carl. I mean, this is like the autocorrect stuff that's built into Word, but it works for the entire system.
We used to do this with batch files. You know, we used to type D-I-R-T, you know, dirt instead of dir.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd make a dirt batch file that calls dir with
yep,
the parameters.
Oh, yeah. Hacking like this has been around forever. But it's amazing how I think that there's the solutions that we're talking about, and I think this is all significant. But one of the things that I think is important, and I think you bring up in some of your posts, is that you have to do a little self-analysis, a little introspection. You have mm-hmm. to know that you have a problem before you actually come up with the solutions.
Right.
And this is part of the geek to live perspective, as opposed to just, hey, this is neat. Hey, this is neat, and it solved a problem. I mean, I had to sit down and say, wow, I have a problem. I consistently misspell stuff.
You know what I think why this appeals to geeks so well, especially programmers, I think, is because I've noticed that as a programmer, to be really good, you cannot serve your ego. You know, you're always questioning whether what you're doing is the right thing or whether it's the right way. And, you know, somebody like an older person who is trying to print, you know, a Word doc, who doesn't really have any experience with computers, is a lot more frail in the tech ego, you know, I do it this way and it's going to work just fine kind of thing. You know, I do my 9-keystroke print, sequence because it works.
Yeah. You have to have flexibility. You have to be able to say, this is not a good way I'm doing this. It costs me time. It costs me money. It costs me minutes.
Yeah. So life hacks seem to me to be the sort of the taking it to its furthest extreme. Okay. So, you know, you can look at yourself, you can see, I'm deficient in these areas. What are some hacks to help me overcome those things?
Absolutely.
This is a lot of hacks. Then looking at this book here, and this just goes on and on and on. You've got 300 pages, like 88 different tips. And I'm looking at this, trying to think how many of these I'm going to be able to apply to my day. How many do you keep in your head? This is one of the things that a lot of people ask me about my tools list that I keep. They're like, wow, this is great. You've got 300 tools listed, but how many do you really use?
Yeah.
You know, I've used the book, first of all, is there are 88 hacks, but it's very much like a buffet, you know. Go up, you flip through it, you figure out what your issues are and kind of pick and choose the ones that are going to really apply to you. I mean, like, I have two different kind of wiki installations in the book, for instance. You don't necessarily want to run two different wikis, but one is much easier than the other, depending on sort of your skill level. And, you know, wiki might not work for a lot of people. I know it wouldn't work for, say, you know, my sister. So the book is kind of like you want to pick and choose the things. I wouldn't recommend that every single person use all 88 hacks. But every single one in the book I have used at one point or another. It really depends on what kind of projects I'm working on at the time and, like, what are the things that are really bugging me. Mm. But I've definitely used every single one at one point or another.
Here's a hack for you, Carl. Hack 15. Sentence stuff to death row. tell Carl about death row and why he needs to involve that in his life.
What's that?
Death row is basically when you're hanging on to too much stuff in your life, whether it's tasks on your to-do list or software installed in your computer or projects that you wanna are thinking about doing, or just like stuff, magazines laying around the house, or gadgets even.
Ah, clutter.
Clutter, yeah, exactly. Any stuff that you doubt about whether or not you need, make a big box, whether it's a virtual folder on your desktop or a physical cardboard box in your office, and dump it in the box. And the box is death row.
That seems like the first step in getting things done to me.
Yeah, it really does. It really is very similar to that. But the thing is with death row, the death row box is that you put it aside, and if you don't think that you need one of those things after a certain amount of time, 6 weeks, say, or a month,
mm-hmm.
toss it. You don't need the stuff. It's basically just, I think that, we're just bombarded with so much information. We have so many tools available to us, at all times. I think that, we really have to be really kind of harsh editors, in our lives and be like, what are the things that I really need? And the rest, like if I don't read that copy of The New Yorker, like, it's okay.
Isn't that funny? That's so true, though, because you look in your book, you've got, like, you might have one tip that'll go on for 10 pages, but, like, the death row tip is two paragraphs, but that might be the one that really affects me.
Yes.
My wife and I walk around the house, and we say, if we haven't physically touched something in 2 years,
yes,
unless
out,
it's a picture
it's a
or something, truly like, a memento, we throw it out.
Exactly.
Just live simpler. It's great that you've got that old Nintendo, but if you haven't touched it in 2 years, toss it.
Exactly.
Mm.
It's very cathartic. I really can't say enough about that. That's the kind of the essence of a life hack, I think, is doing something that might make you a little uncomfortable initially, but at the end you're going to say, wow, that was very satisfying. Things are better now on the other side.
Absolutely. And the nice thing about the death row approach is that you give yourself, you know, a window of a couple of months, like, you know, okay, I'm going to give myself a little safety net. You know, if I realize I'm going to need this next week, then it comes out of the box and I hold on to it, you know?
Totally. Totally. Now, in the interest of making things better, we've talked about bookmark, let's talk about life hacks, but I understand that you're also a Firefox 2.0 extension developer.
Yes.
And a lot of my listeners write, you know, ActiveX controls and stuff, but the other than having a whole lot of extensions installed, I don't even know what is inside an XPI extension.
An XPI is actually, a Firefox extension is an XPI file, but an XPI is actually just a zip file. If you renamed an XPI to .zip, you could unzip it with, you know, WinZip or 7-zip. And it's just a file that's made up of other files, JavaScript and XML. Zool, which I'm actually not sure if even that's the way you say it, because I've only read it, XUL, is the specification that Firefox uses to plug into the browser and to the Chrome. So you really can download any Firefox extension, like I said, and unzip it to take a look at the innards of it. And really, all it is snippets of JavaScript and pieces of XML which say, add this button to this toolbar or add this menu to this, you know, to this pull down. So it's really actually very simple. In fact, when I first realized that that's all a Firefox extension was, I was kind of amazed. So really, I mean, if you're a bookmarklet developer or even if you just know a little bit of JavaScript, it's not hard at all to make a Firefox extension.
And you can access pretty much anything on the page, but they can also access other parts. I mean, it's not just the JavaScript DOM, but you can get to aspects of the user interface, right?
Chrome.
How do you do that? Is that what the Zool does? It lets you talk to the outside, what you call the Chrome?
Yeah, exactly. You can talk to the Chrome using the XML specification. You can say, you can add menu items and buttons and that kind of thing.
So the Chrome is the term for the outer shell of Mozilla.
The Firefox menus and status bar and the part
that's not the renderer.
Right, it's not the renderer.
That's kind of anticlimactic, isn't it? So I can just open up the delicious.xpi and go and see how they did that and make my own like that.
Yeah, it's really not hard. I mean, there's a certain folder structure and that kind of thing, but it's really not difficult. In fact, at this point, now Firefox 2's developer tools are much, much better. I started developing extensions for Firefox 0.9, and it was just, it was a nightmare. But things have gotten a lot better. And in fact, it's just a Google away. There are a few developer tools. I mean, there's one that it's like a wizard that's like, put in the name of your extension, you know, put in, you know, you kind of enter in basic information and it creates a skeleton for you to start with.
Gina, what is todo.txt?
Todo.txt is the way that I keep track of all of my to-dos and projects and that kind of thing. And I wrote, it's just a simple text file, but I found myself opening it up in an editor and rearranging it and sorting it and wanting to kind of tag it with keywords and only see the lines that had certain keywords. So I wound up writing a script. It's a shell script, which I actually run in Cygwin on Windows, which is a Unix emulator. So it's a bash script. It's not a batch script, which manages my todo.txt. So if I add a task to my to-do text, which is just a plain text file, which has, you know, project life hacker, draft idea for next week's feature, that would be, say, one line in my to-do text. And my to-do text script, I can say, show me all of the life hacker-related to-dos that I have, or show me all the home improvement to-dos that I've listed.
How big is your todo.txt right now?
I try and keep mine actually to under 100 lines.
Really?
So, it's about 90 lines. Yeah, my to-do text isn't a dumping ground for everything. It's next actions. It's like what David Allen would consider a next action. It's like very concrete, thought out, committed to, I'm definitely doing this, next actions.
Yeah, I'm looking at your todo.sh, your shell script, and you just say like T list tax return.
Exactly.
And it filters out just those things that apply to your tax return.
Exactly.
I mean, everyone's got a todo.txt on their desktop or has had one at some point. I do right now, and it has no structure at all. So you've kind of come up with a pretty simple tag structure with prefixes and suffixes to give context to that, all within the next action's kind of gestalt.
Exactly, exactly. And they're also, you can also add context. So like if, you know, call Scott is a phone call I have to make, I would say the context there is at phone. So if I am, you know, sitting at my desk and I've got access to a phone but nothing else, I can say, hey, show me all the phone calls I have to make, and just say list, you know, at phone. I would get those. So it's basically just like tagging tasks, so you can kind of slice and dice them however you want at the command line.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because I just installed Office 2007 and it was like 800 megs and it takes 300 megs of RAM and I'm using it to manage my next actions. And you have a text file with 100 lines. And I'm jealous.
Simplicity.
Yeah, it is. It's just, it's funny. That just like the syncing to paper that we talked about before, the idea that sometimes it's comforting just to get a 3x5 card and write down what you have to do.
Exactly.
There is comfort in a simple text file and a clean. I mean, I'm sure that you can add something to that instantly, right? It takes you no time at all. You don't have to launch anything. You just go add, boom, and then it's done.
Yep. I've got a little keyboard shortcut. Yep.
That's fantastic.
So Gina, how many blogs do you have?
How many blogs do I have personally?
Yeah, I'm seeing, just websites. Like I see Spun and The Digital Journalist and Scribbling.net.
Uh-huh.
That is, and then there's the other one, which I mentioned before, Misbehaving.net.
Uh-huh.
You seem to have a lot of projects going on.
I have a lot of projects going on. Not all of those are mine. The Digital Journalist is a photojournalism magazine, which I produce. They're actually one of my clients.
Okay.
Spun is my kind of developer blog, which doesn't get updated very frequently because I'm usually life hacking most of my time. Scribbling.net is my personal blog, which also doesn't get updated very often. You can go there to check to see, you know, pictures of my cat, what I had for lunch,
I see.
All that kind of fun stuff. And Misbehaving is a site that I work with a bunch of other folks. So
that's cool. So the life hacks are working. Apparently, you have all this time to do all these projects.
I don't know. If you look at the last updated date on a few of those sites, you might not think so.
So you're a professional blogger.
Yes.
Would you say that's fair to say? I mean, everyone blogs. I mean, not everyone, but I mean, a lot of people blog. A lot of people say, well, gee, how can I monetize my blog? I know I've got a little AdSense and a little some RSS ads. And, you know, it brings in a couple hundred bucks a month and I use it to basically eat. You know, but we're not buying cars and flying off to Cabo with the money we're making blogging.
Right.
But blogging pays your mortgage.
Yes, I am a professional blogger, though it's hard for me to say that without laughing a little bit.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, one of the differences between doing Lifehacker and doing my, you know, personal blog is that, you know, Gawker Media publishes Lifehacker. So it's more like writing for a magazine than writing a, you know, my own blog. Like, you know, writing Lifehacker is like, you know, we have a whole kind of sales department and tech department that kind of takes care of a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And I get paid, you know, not a salary, but more as a contractor, you know, to write the site.
But you're not paid like per word or per blog. There's just a sense that you're doing a good job and they say, wow, you know, this was a great week for Lifehacker.
Well, we get paid on a post basis, and then that we also get bonuses for like traffic increases.
Oh, really? So they track that kind of stuff. So Gawker Media, they have a number of different blogs?
Yes, they do. I think 15 right now.
You know what I like about lifehacker.com is the quality of the posts is great. It's not just like stream of consciousness, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's a lot like Scott's blog in that way. And, you know, I'm just seeing it for the first time. So that's why I'm comparing yours to his.
In the geek world, we'd say the signal to noise ratio is very high.
Very high. Yeah.
Thank you.
And, you know, complete with very nice graphics that are laid out in an intelligent way. And, you know, that's very nice to be able to, I would come back here again and again.
Oh, I actually have a folder in my, I've got like, I don't know, 1500 blogs or whatever, but I've got a folder called Essential. And that's like the, if I can't read any blogs at all today, here are the 12 that I read. And Lifehackers, well, they're under L.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
It's like sites like this, sites like Engadget, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I hate to say this, I may get my geek card revoked, but I haven't read Slashdot in a while. It's just the same kind of bile. I don't like blogging bile. I like positivism, if that's a word.
I pretty much read Dig now.
Really?
Most of the time, yeah. In Google News.
I'm liking these, I think of these boutique sites, I don't have to call, I apologize for calling Lifehacker a boutique site, but it's focused on one thing. And you're obviously careful not to just turn it into a link dumping site.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely,
I'm sure that you're conscious about that kind of stuff. It sounds like you're really less of a blogger and more of a professional journalist. Is that a better way to put it? Or professional technology writer? The blog is just one of the representations of that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, somewhere in between a blogger and a journalist, for sure.
Okay. What's your favorite life hack? All-time favorite.
Oh, all-time favorite.
No, that's pressure.
That's a tough one. You know, we've done about 8,000 posts on the site at this point, and I love them all like my children.
Well, what are ones that you do every day? What's the, like, oh, wow, I'm so glad I have that, and I use it every day?
I would say definitely index cards in my back pocket.
Really?
To write things down that come up in my mind. Absolutely. Yeah, I have a little bit of, you know, like most programmers, a little bit of ADD. Things come up, and I got to get them out, or else I'll get hung up on them.
Index
and suddenly...
cards, though, not a Moleskine.
I do have a Moleskine, which I really like. Although Moleskine is such a beautiful notebook that I feel bad about sticking in my back pocket and sitting on it and, you know, getting it dirty. So.
I'm trying to get Carl onto the Moleskine. This is the iPod of personal notebooks, right?
Oh, yeah,
they're
beautiful.
We buy it just because Hemingway had one. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. And what'll happen with me is I'll get about halfway through it, filling it, and then I'll just say, well, I want a fresh one.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm always jealous of those people. You go into their office, and they've got like 15 of them, and they're all filled up, and they're like labeled with the month that they wrote it, and they can go back and... I'm never writing enough in these things.
I pretty much do all of my work on a Samsung PDA phone, a pocket PC phone.
Mm-hmm.
And without that, I'm pretty much screwed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's tough. There's a certain visceral glee that I get from having a piece of paper. I mean, sometimes when I'm stressed out, I don't take my laptop to a coffee shop because I have to get all those windows out of the way.
Yes.
The way I get the windows out of the way is with a piece of paper.
Absolutely.
And
agreed.
A Fisher Space Pen.
Hmm.
Yes.
Hmm.
Absolutely. Well, fantastic. I really appreciate you, Gina, taking the time to give us a call. We've got a kind of a three-way phone call. You're in the Bay Area?
I'm in San Diego, actually.
San Diego?
Yeah.
Via Brooklyn, though.
South. SoCal.
You're from Brooklyn, though, originally?
Yes, I am.
And did you move out to the West Coast to blog?
No, actually, Gawker's based in New York City. So we have editors kind of all over the country. I moved out to California just to, you know, learn how to surf, have a couple of burritos.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time. We're going to put all the links to the Delicious Category for Life Hacks, to Lifehacker.com, to the Geek to Live stuff. You've got a how-to on how to write a Firefox extension. We'll post that up there, as well as information on the term life hacks and where that came from.
Excellent.
And then we'll also post links to your book on Amazon. It's coming out in a week or two, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. This has been great.
Gina, thanks again from myself and everybody here at Co-op Studios. And we will talk to you next week, dear listener, on Hansel Minutes.